of Art Bell was recorded for rebroadcast at this time. Please do not call.
From the Kingdom of Nine, we continue with your calls on Dreamland with Art Bell. Call Art now, toll-free at 1-800-618-8255. 1-800-618-TALK. First-time callers, area code 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222.
Once again, I am here. And a very good evening to you all. This is Dreamland. My guest is Michael Cremo. Michael has an intriguing theory, or actually he feels it's a lot more than theory, and we're going to get to some of the evidence here shortly. He's written a book called The Hidden History of the Human Race. And apparently, quite a history it is. Some of the evidence coming up. And, Michael, just before we get into the evidence aspect, I've got a couple of faxes here that I would like to ask you about. One is from a great faxer named Doc Berry down in Phoenix. And the question is, how does the immortal soul theory fit into the author's cosmic hierarchy theory?
It fits in very well. That would be a big part of it. And I would say the physical evidence for that would come in the form of the medical reports, well-documented medical reports of the out-of-body experiences, the near-death experiences, and also transmigration or reincarnation memories, such as those studied by Dr. Ian Stevenson, who is a psychiatrist at the University of Virginia. He studied thousands of cases of small children who report past life memories. Now, children, they can't go to the library and make up a very elaborate past life story. These children tend to report very ordinary past lives, and he's been able to document the previous incarnation of these children in hundreds of cases.
I too find children to be very credible in these areas. All right, I hate to rush you, but we've got to do that. Here's another one. Is it possible that life has been brought to this planet numerous times, and like plants hot, we keep dying as a species? Our sponsors, the ETs, I guess, may not want to waste a perfectly good planet and have continued to recycle this place for millions of years. Good theory?
Well, the part, I don't know that I could agree with every detail of it, but the part, the first part that was mentioned, that we've got multiple origins on this planet, we didn't come just once, it's an ongoing process, that is something that I fully agree with, and I think the evidence supports it, especially if you look down through history at what different peoples have reported. You get a lot of evidence of different extraterrestrial contacts, different descents of human species on this planet, and I think that's very well supported by the evidence.
And that's a good place to break into evidence. If I were to ask you, Michael, what is your best evidence? What is the evidence that supports your theory that man, along with other creatures on the planet, have been around so long? Give me the best stuff you've got. What would you give me?
Right. And this is, I think, really have to pay this attention to the evidence, because if we're going to an alternative explanation to the evolutionary doctrine that is now so dominant, we have to show that that evidence is not, that theory is not supported by the evidence. Otherwise, why even talk about these alternatives? So, let's look at some discoveries that were made by some California gold miners back in the gold rush days. They were digging tunnels thousands of feet into solid rock in the sides of mountains. Now, you know, I've talked with geologists in the state of California, and they say that this rock in these mountains is at least 10 million and as much as 50 million years old. Now, inside these tunnels, these miners were finding human skeletons. They were finding obsidian spear points. They were finding all kinds of human artifacts. These were collected together by a man named J.D. Whitney, who was the state geologist of California at the time, and he wrote a massive book about them, which was published by Harvard University. in 1883. Now, my question is, why don't we hear about these anymore? Why aren't they on display in the museums?
That's right.
They were suppressed. The evidence was suppressed. There was a very powerful anthropologist named William H. Holmes in Washington, D.C., at the Smithsonian Institution, that institution that's still there on the Mall in Washington, D.C. And here's what...
And I might add, Michael, in the business, in my view, of distorting or trying to even recent history with respect to World War II, but that's another story.
All right. But you can see there's a whole history of how that distortion goes on. So this is what this Dr. Holmes of the Smithsonian Institution said to Whitney out in California. He said, and this, the exact quote's in our book, but this is a good rendition of it. He said, if Dr. Whitney had understood the theory of human evolution as we understand it today, then he would have hesitated to announce his conclusions, you know, despite the imposing array of facts with which he was confronted. In other words, the facts don't go along with the theory, then the facts have to go, and Dr. Whitney has to go, and the artifacts have to go. So there you had some very good evidence showing you had human beings up to 50 million years ago in California. You know, going back a little bit further, we had in 1862 a scientific magazine called The Geologist that told how in Macoupin County, Illinois, which is right here in the United States, at 90 feet deep below the ground in coal, in a layer of coal that was below 2 solid feet of slate rock, an entire human skeleton, no different than ours, in other words, not an ape-man skeleton, but a skeleton no different than ours, was found in the coal there.
That it just seems impossible that this could have happened, and I realize where you're going with respect to then the age of that being, obviously, but it seems impossible to me that the traditional scientific community could either suppress, ignore, or lie about evidence of this magnitude.
Well, it does happen, and it's still happening today. We shouldn't be so surprised that evidence can be kept secret. For example, we find that governments they can keep secrets.
Well, you know, I know that's true, Michael, but the origins of the human being, it's such an important question that you would think that even scientists with egos regarding previously established theories would not be blind to really significant evidence like a skeleton in coal. Now, how are they able to just dismiss, and how can they call themselves scientists if they do?
Well, I just gave you the example of this William Holmes of the Smithsonian Institution just saying, just bluntly dismissing a huge body of evidence, human skeletons, tools, all kinds of things, you know, from California, just because it went against the idea of human evolution.
Well, he's but one scientist.
A lot of power, a lot of prestige, a lot of money is involved in all this. There are some of the big foundations, like the Rockefeller Foundation and the Carnegie Institution, are involved in this.
So you're saying
governments are involved in this. We see that basically... this idea of Darwinian evolution is being enforced on the American education system by the full power of the United States government through its judicial system. In other words, the scientists have got the United States government suppressing this evidence. Mm. Now, this is and preventing it from being taught in the schools. So, to me, it's not at all surprising how a very powerful elite group of people making use of every resource that they have can keep this evidence suppressed. And I could give you some very good examples of that are going on even today.
Well, still, it's incredible, Michael.
Of course it is. That's why I wrote this book. It is incredible. It is shocking, and I think people need to know about it.
But it is saying that all of these organizations and all of these scientists, instead of being devoted to a search for the truth, you're charging are devoted to maintaining a cover-up.
That's right. And this is going on in many areas. Well, I can tell you a person that I know personally who was a victim of this kind of treatment. It's Virginia Steen McIntyre, a geologist who was working with the U.S. Geological Survey. Now, in the 1960s, some anthropologists went down to Mexico at a place called Huayatlaco, which is near Puebla, which is just near Mexico City. And they uncovered some human artifacts there, some advanced stone tools. And when the anthropologists dig up something like that, they want to know how old it is. So what they do is they call in a geologist.
Right.
Because the geologist can tell them how old the strata of the earth were in which those things were found. So they called in Virginia Steen McIntyre of the U.S. Geological Survey.
Yes.
And she and three of her colleagues dated that site with four different methods, and each of the methods gave an age of about 250,000 years, which is unusual for two reasons. First of all, no human being should have been in existence 250,000 years ago, anatomically modern human beings like us.
Indeed.
And what to speak of in Mexico, because the standard idea is that human beings didn't come over to the New World until about 20,000 years ago, when the Indians supposedly came over the Bering land bridge up in Alaska from Siberia and wandered down into America.
Yes.
So to have this evidence at 250,000 years in Mexico was shocking. Now, the anthropologists, they were shocked because it would ruin their careers. They were expecting,
indeed,
oh, well, we'll get a date. So Virginia Steen McIntyre, she decided she was going to stick with her dates. Now, here's what happened to her. She couldn't get them published. She couldn't get the reports published. She was labeled a maverick and a publicity seeker in her profession. She lost the teaching position that she held at an American university, and finally, she was forced out of her job, and she couldn't work as an archaeologist, I mean a geologist again.
So what did she do? Change it all?
What did she do? No, she is still sticking by her guns, and she and I were both actually on a show called Sightings a couple of weeks ago.
I know Sightings, of course.
Right, and she's trying to get that message out. Now, this is one example of some very direct suppression that's going on. In another field, this Dr. John Mack, who's a psychiatrist at Harvard...
He's been a guest on the program.
Right. Now, here's what's happened to him recently. We've received some communication from his attorneys who have told us that of course, you know what he does. He has investigated
yes,
reports of alien abductions of people under hypnosis.
And
Harvard University has convened a secret academic committee, and the report that this committee is delivering has said that he is acting irresponsibly as a scholar.
Really?
And his attorneys say that this report will be used to attempt to take away his tenure and perhaps even to institute a malpractice suit against him.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
Now this is, it's like the Galileo case all over again. So when we hear science is an objective process.
I take it that he will, there is some procedure in place to give Professor Mack an opportunity to defend the legitimacy of his views,
yes,
and research, correct?
That's correct.
And what procedure is that?
He has until, according to the communication that I saw, he has until March 15th to offer a defense, and I think researchers around the country who are sympathetic to him are being asked to write to the administration of Harvard University in support of him.
I'm so sorry to hear about that. I'm so sorry to hear about that. I thought we had taken a step forward, and this sounds like one, maybe two, to the rear.
Yes, Art. And this is, these are the things that convinced me that it isn't so hard to see why evidence that goes against the standard views can be suppressed in other areas as well.
It's a pretty good example, all right, and I'm sorry to hear it. All right, I would like to begin taking some calls, if you would. Boy, that's really shocking news about Professor Mack. When did you get that news?
This arrived in the mail a couple of months ago here at our offices, and it was directed to my co-author, Richard Thompson, who is the author of a book called Alien Identities, which deals with UFO questions.
Mm-hmm. All right, let us begin taking a few calls, Michael. On West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Michael Cremo. Good evening.
Good evening, Art Bell. This is Ed. I'm in Rio Larkspur, California.
Hello, Ed.
A very good evening to you. I've been very interested. I've been following your program off of other stations, and it got shifted off of KSFO. I picked you up in my car. I don't have a phone there, and I can't get it in my house, but that's where I'm calling you from.
I understand.
My friend, I have something that perhaps you'll laugh. But about a year ago, I came across a series of books beginning in 1982, published by a credentialed person in Southern California who is a transcriber. The astounding thing about it is, and I'm shaken to even tell you this because I don't expect it to be believed, but there has been in print now since 1991 something called The New Revelation of the Lord Jesus Christ. It is 760-odd pages in quotes. It's not a channel job.
All right, can you give us a brief idea of what it is about?
Yes, sir. It starts with the premise that the spiritual progression in the, what is known as the multiverse, universe, planet, earth, everywhere, is now such that a direct revelation can be put into plain English instead of the language of correspondences that is used in the Bible. Because at that time, humanity and much else was in its infancy and had to be told, like, don't touch this radiator. It was or else and no explanations. The astounding thing is that it sets forth, in quotes, as I say.
Got to hurry here.
Yeah. It sets forth the whole history of the human race, of humanity in general, its place, the extent and degree to which our guesswork has been nothing much more than that. And it confirms that we are a splice job and probably ninth or tenth or 15th one down the line.
All right. Are you aware of this, Michael?
I've heard similar things. I'm not aware of that exact book, no.
All right. I can say is you should, sir, share the source with us. We're at the bottom of the hour. So please feel free to share the source, fax or write to me. Let me know how to get hold of it, and we will do some investigation. That's all I can promise. Michael Cremo is my guest. The Hidden History of the Human Race, his book. We'll be right back. Now, Michael Cremo. Michael, here is yet another fact. Your guest's theory on the origin of man is nearly identical to the descriptions by Randolph Winters in his book on the Pleiadians. That's from from John in Richland, Washington. Now, Michael, does that sound familiar to you? Do you know about Randolph Winters?
I'm not familiar with all the details of his idea. What I will say is, I think one of the characteristics of what I'm presenting is that it is not unique. As I've said, it's something that you will find mentioned in channeled communications. You will find it mentioned in this idea of the cosmic hierarchy, and as I said, practically every cultural and spiritual tradition that's ever existed.
How much credibility do you give to channelers, Michael?
Well, it all depends. Practically every communication that we have from higher dimensions, you could say, is in one way or other channeled. Now, you may call it divine inspiration or the Holy Spirit speaking through someone, but I think channeling as a phenomenon, as a way of getting information from the higher levels in the hierarchy, is a very well-established fact. Now, what may be coming through those channels, I think we have to, you know, judge, because sometimes you may be getting disinformation. I think this happens in many of the UFO communication.
Well, it happens in all related fields, I'm sure.
Right.
Michael, I'm sure. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Michael Cremo. Good evening.
Good evening. I have two quick questions.
All right. Where are you?
Tacoma, Washington.
Tacoma. All right. Go ahead.
Okay. Earlier, your guest said that we've been, as humans, existing on the Earth with all the creatures, including Bigfoot.
Yes.
And I was wondering what he thinks of some of the stories that I've heard about Bigfoot in connection with UFO sightings.
All right.
Yes. Well, I was alluding to that before. I was saying that we can't consider these creatures simply to be just sort of like big apes. They seem to have, some of them have powers that go beyond what normal animals would be expected to have. And there is indeed quite a literature on reports of these creatures in connection.
Well, as long as we're on the subject, Michael, you keep taunting me with that powers. They seem to have powers. For example.
Well, it's very unusual that none of them have ever been captured.
So you mean powers of eluding hunters?
Right. Powers for eluding hunters. Also having been sighted in connection with these UFO objects. Also, if you look at traditional accounts from the American Indians of these creatures, and they tend to manifest some mystic powers, as do many of the other animals that may be mentioned.
Okay, well, with respect to the UFOs, I guess it would make sense, Michael, that they would keep track of one species, or Bigfoot, along with human beings who have been abducted and animals that we consistently hear are abducted for one reason or another. So if your theory, if one accepts your theory, then it would make sense that UFOs would monitor these creatures as much as they might monitor us, only there would be far fewer of them. So I guess all that would make some sense. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Michael Cremo. Hi.
Hello, this is Jack from Charleston, South Carolina.
Hi, Jack.
Hi. I wanted to ask your guest if he knows the air date of the sightings program that he said he taped a couple of weeks ago.
That's a good question.
And that show has already aired. It aired this past winter. I forget what day it aired. It's already been on the air. I will mention, however, that I'm now working on as a consultant for one of the major networks for a television special. I can't reveal too much about it, but it'll be coming out in the fall.
All right.
Also, I want to ask quickly. I went to tell someone in my house what you were already talking about, and I came back. You mentioned about something about too bad about Dr. Professor Mack. Is that John Mack, the one who did alien investigations?
Yes, sir.
Saying about him?
I hate to have to go over it again, but basically Harvard is challenging Dr. Mack's credentials and area of investigation, and there's going to be some hearings or something. Is that about right, Michael?
That's right. Yeah, the charge is that he's been acting irresponsibly as a scholar in suggesting that there may be some actual truth behind these stories of alien abductions.
So there you are. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Michael Cremo. Good evening.
Hello, this is Fritz from Phoenix.
Yes, Fritz.
Well, over and over again, there's one mystery that baffles mankind for so many years, and I'm sure every one of you listening to these radio audience here is aware of it, that the Yeti or the Abominable Snowman, Sasquatch, or the Bigfoot definitely has a connection with the UFO. In my opinion, they're all under the umbrella of the extraterrestrial presence, and mm-hmm. they were brought here to our planet for whatever reasons. Michael, can you accept that?
Well, that is Michael's theory of how we got here.
Well, I would say that we all have an extraterrestrial origin if we trace it back far enough. All of the creatures on this planet, and it may be quite a complex series of events that led to all of the creatures on this planet being placed here.
I wonder why the extraterrestrials decided to put so many varieties of human beings here. Any thoughts on that?
Well, it would appear that from ancient Sanskrit writings, we learned that there are 400,000 human species scattered throughout the universe. So we may it would appear also from the UFO literature that there are many types of aliens. There are the standard grays, there are the so-called Nordic type. It would appear that there you also have a variety. So it doesn't surprise me that we may have been visited many times, and that the human history may be much more complex than we've been led to imagine.
Michael, when you stick with simple archaeology, when you simply challenge traditional scientific theories regarding how long we've been here and how we developed, it seems to me you're on one ground. When you jump to an explanation that involves extraterrestrials, then you put yourself in exactly the same position as Dr. Mack is now in, and it makes it much easier for the traditional scientific community to throw fertilizer on your whole theory. Yes?
Well, they'll also try to object to the even the archaeological evidence, as you were suggesting earlier.
Well, I know, but they hardly even have to bother with that, Michael. If,
right.
You know, given what you've given them, I mean, it makes it easy for them, doesn't it?
Well, I think there's another whole area of knowledge suppression going on, and that has to do with anything connected with the paranormal or the extraterrestrial or
that's
the
true.
Supernatural, whatever you want to call it.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
And I think now what I want to do is directly confront the scientific community on those points, and I don't think I'm alone in this. We're seeing, for example, you have in existence today, an international society for the study of subtle energy medicine, which is composed of about 1,200 medical professionals and biologists that are looking at subtle healing and subtle energies. In other words, if we're going to have an alternative explanation of human origins, the first thing that we have to show is that there is more to the human essence than can be explained by chemistry, biochemistry.
Indeed, it's a very good point. Yes, sure.
And you have the Institute for Noetic Sciences. You have many individual scholars who are courageously investigating these things. So I see that there is, and it may sound like a cliche to say it, but there is a paradigm shift underway, and I think it's making a lot of progress.
Well, I thought so too, but hearing about Professor Mack makes me wonder. And maybe you're underestimating the resistance that the traditional scientific community will put up. It will be stiff, it will be strong, and it will virtually ridicule people like yourself and John Mack and others.
Well, these are the standard tactics. The first line of defense is to try to ignore something. When you can no longer try to ignore something, then you ridicule it.
That's right.
And then if that doesn't work, then you get the heavier kinds of suppression. But I think we have to look and see what would happen in the case of communism, for example. Right up to the last minute, they were in charge.
Yes.
They were still in charge, but there was so much going on underground and around the sides that eventually the system collapsed, even though right up to the last minute...
Traditional science will collapse the way communism did all at once, nearly with no warning. Boom, the fences come down. Is that right?
Because there are so many people who do not believe in it anymore. There are so many cracks in the consensus. There are so many independent scholars investigating these things and counter, and as I said, so many organized attempts by scholars who are a little bit more independent to investigate these subjects. So I think the combined weight of that will eventually bring about a collapse of the current consensus.
All right,
which has only been around for about 200 or 300 years.
I understand. All right, Michael, right. Let's stay with the phones here. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Michael Cremo. Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Where are you, sir?
Sarasota, Florida.
Excellent. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. What comes to my mind? I admit I missed about a half hour of your show here, but I'm thinking about a photograph I saw that claims to be a sandal print with a crest trilobite underneath, which predates most life forms on this planet by several million years.
Yes, sir.
Recall.
What you're talking about is the Meister footprint discovered by Robert Meister in Utah. Mm-hmm. And my co-author, Richard Thompson, went and visited Mr. Meister. He's no longer living, but at the time he was living. And we obtained photographs, our own photographs of those footprints. Now, those footprints were discovered in Cambrian shale in Utah. And that rock in which those sandal prints were found is roughly 600 million years old. And as I've pointed out several times, according to what the scientific elite will tell us today, human beings like us have only been around on this planet about 100,000 years. As a matter of fact, 600 million years ago, they would say there was no life.
Something was wearing shoes.
on the surface of the Earth at all. Maybe there would have been some marine creatures, just life in the ocean.
Michael,
those prints are there, and we did a computer analysis of them. We found that the shape of that print did not deviate in the slightest from a modern human shoe print.
Uh-huh. Michael, what about the possibility that that print was somehow put in that older rock in more recent times? How do you discount that possibility?
Well, from the testimony of the person who discovered it, who said he was a rock collector, and he was going through an area with one of those little geologist picks.
Yes.
You know, and he was breaking open. He was looking for trilobites. So he was, which are those little fossils of these little shellfish.
Sure.
And he was breaking open solid pieces of this rock.
Mm.
So it was not something that somebody could have carved into a rock like that.
Okay, I've got you.
Yeah.
East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Michael Cremo. Hi, where are you calling from, please?
This is Dave in Wichita.
Hello, Dave.
I wondered if Michael had heard about the age of the Sphinx being at least 10,000 years old, and that some evidence in the Pernas, the ancient Indian writings, say that it's about 100,000 years old.
All right, the
right.
Sphinx.
Dave, I'm very familiar with that. You're talking about the work of Dr. Robert Schock, who is a geologist at Boston University. He analyzed the Sphinx, the weathering of the Sphinx, and determined that it was far older, many thousands of years older than current Egyptologists would say. And here's, I'll tell you about how this knowledge suppression factor operates. He wants to go back and conduct further studies, but the Antiquities Department, you know, the government of Egypt, the department in charge of those monuments will not let him go back right at the present moment. Now, the Egyptians themselves, if you look at the ancient Egyptian writings themselves, they have a list of pharaohs going back 400,000 years. The Babylonians also have king lists going back 400,000 years. So this is, most people are not aware of these facts. You read in your standard textbooks about Egyptian history, it only goes back a few thousand years.
Huh. All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Michael Cremo. Good evening. Hello?
Are we on the air right now?
Yes, we're on the air, sir.
Oh. Yeah, I didn't mean to get on the air. I just wanted to find out...
All right, if you don't want to be on the air, I'm going to have to go to the next call.
I just wanted to find out what time Dreamland is on.
It's on right now.
Yeah, but through the week.
Dreamland is not on during the week.
Only weekends?
Yes, that's correct.
What times?
7 to 10.
Saturday and Sunday.
7 to 10 Pacific time, Sunday.
And not on Saturday?
No.
Okay.
All right, thank you. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Michael Cremo. Hi.
Yeah, good evening, Art. My name's Ed from Albuquerque.
Yes, sir.
I have a question to ask him. He's familiar with Scientific American Publication, isn't he?
Yes, I am.
Yeah. About 4 years ago, there was an article that was written about the genetic study that was trying to correlate orangutans back to humans. And the study concluded that this wasn't feasible, but the genetic study put man all the way back 150,000 to 200,000 years ago, and the origin took place somewhere near Egypt. And this was a very, very precise scientific study. And when they were ready to release their findings, they found out that Japan had done exactly almost an identical, similar study. And the data, you know, was very, very comparable to one or the other. And it stated that they didn't know how man started, and they were kind of tongue-in-cheek by calling it Eve as a starting of origin of man 150 to 200,000 years ago. And this was done in a very, very scientific genetic basis. Could you answer on that, please?
Well, it's very interesting. What happened was that a couple of years later, that African Eve hypothesis was shot down because other scientists came and proved that the statistics that were used in those reports just did not work.
All right, on that note, we've got a break right here. It is the top of the hour. Relax for a few moments, Michael, and we'll come back to you. Michael Cremo is my guest. His book, The Hidden History of the Human Race, and there's a lot. We'll be back. This is CBC. Hot Talk.